This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Tommy Lee Jones, has starred in such films as Men in Black, The Fugitive, Batman Forever, JFK, and Coal Miner's Daughter. He makes his feature film debut as a director with the new movie The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada. At this year's Cannes Film Festival, Jones won Best Actor for Three Burials, and the film won for Best Screenplay. It was written by Guillermo Arriagas, who also wrote Amoros Paris and 21 Grams. Three Burials is set in West Texas. Jones plays Pete, a rancher who hires a Mexican named Melquiades Estrada. They become close friends. Melquiades is accidentally shot by an out-of-control Border Patrol guard. Melquiades is buried, and the incident is covered up until Pete learns what's happened to his friend. He digs up his friend's body and begins a long journey with the corpse to fulfill the promise he once made to bury Melquiades in the small Mexican village where he grew up. Pete forces the guilty Border Patrol guard to accompany him. In this scene from early in the film, Pete has learned his friend has been killed and wants to make sure the sheriff is investigating. The sheriff is played by Dwight Yoakam.
This is working hours?
We're about to close.
You need to investigate them Border Patrols that use 223.
You want me to investigate the Kennedy assassination while I'm at it? Before you start bitching, I suggest you find out what that little f***er was involved with.
Melquiades wasn't involved in nothing.
By the way, we already buried him.
I told you to notify me. Seemed like you'd at least notify me.
You're not his family. I don't have to notify you about a damn thing. He was a wetback.
Tommy Lee Jones, welcome to Fresh Air. The story of the Three Burials is in part about a relationship between two men that is so close that when one of the men is killed, the other man, you, wants to fulfill the wish that his friend asked for, and what his friend asked for was, promise me one thing, if I die, carry me back to my family and bury me in my hometown. I don't want to be buried on this side, on the American side, with all the billboards.
Yeah.
And so your character, you know, fulfills his friend's wish. What kind of thought did you put into considering what it would do to a man to carry the corpse of his dearest friend as it begins to rot for miles and miles until he comes to what he thinks is the correct burial place?
That's a pretty good question. The story is has a narrative form that's very old. It's a classical narrative form of the journey where, let's say, a character, you can call him Mr. Hero.
That's good.
Yeah, Mr. Hero, Mr. H, starts in a... at the beginning of the story, we find him in a bad place, a rather mundane, possibly even evil place, and circumstances compel him to make a long journey through various other places. Some of them dangerous and life-threatening, possibly. Some very funny, some mysterious. Usually there's an oracle somewhere along the way until he winds up in a good place where he knows who he is and is able to relate more gracefully to the world around him. And that's pretty much our story. You know, once you observe a classical narrative form like that, you can start in a mundane place with ordinary motivations and develop some allegorical, perhaps even metaphorical, qualities as you journey toward the end. If you're looking for a motivation, you can say, why does Pete haul that dead body back to Mexico? So, well, he does it because he said he would. But other issues arise. There's a metaphorical quality to the movie. It's rather poetic.
I'll confess that I never really saw Lonesome Dove, but my producer tells me that your character in that, like in The Three Burials, carries
a dead person for
a long distance. Are the two connected in your mind at all?
Not at all. When Guillermo Arriaga came up with the idea of taking this dead Mexican back into Mexico, I said, you know, Guillermo, I've already played a role where a guy takes a dead friend back home. And he said, oh, What was that? I said, it's Lonesome Dove. He said, oh, what's that? And I said, never mind, man. Never mind. So there actually is no connection, and I stopped worrying about it after 5 minutes.
You grew up and continued to live near where the movie shot. There's one scene where you and another of the main characters is riding at the edge of a narrow cliff on a pretty tall mountain, like rock formation. I'm not exactly sure what word to use for the geography, so you can help me here.
But well, it's a canyon.
A canyon.
It's another
Thank
deep
you.
Canyon.
Thank you.
With a steep wall.
And one of the horses, you know, it's like a pack horse carrying supplies
yeah.
for you, falls off the side. And then there's a shot where the camera is at the bottom of the canyon looking up as the horse falls down. Pretty spectacular shot. Can you talk a little bit about why this shot was important in the movie and also about how you did it?
Okay. Well, it was important because we needed some action and excitement at that point in the script. Otherwise, it's a simple travelogue. You see the guys riding across the country, nothing happens. Well, we really need the story needed something to happen. So I decided, well, we'll just throw a horse off a cliff. How did we do it? Well, it took a long time. We found the location, and we had to send a bulldozer to build a road so that we could get there. Very early on the morning of that day, the radio crackled, and it was the camera crew at the bottom of the cliff wanting to know where to put the camera. I said, well, you know, we fellas, step back about 50 yards, if you will, and I asked for a sack full of sand and rocks, and the property department brought it, and I threw it off the cliff. And when it hit, I got on the radio and said, did you guys see where that sandbag hit? And they said, hell yes, there's a hole there. I said, put the camera in the hole.
Oh, gee.
And they did, and that's what created that shot. The dummy that we threw off, it's an articulated dummy, which means it has a little motor inside that'll move its feet and head a little bit so that it looks vital. Played its part very well. It behaved just like the sandbag did, and went right into the camera. It destroyed the camera and the lens and cracked the magazine, flashed the last 60 or 80 feet of film, which is why we cut where we do. But it's a good cutting point. It's the best kind of cutting point. We really had no choice.
So where were the cameramen standing? Pretty far away?
Far enough.
Right. Now, you have, I think, a couple of cattle ranches?
At the moment, yes.
What are the pleasures, what do you like about having a cattle ranch? And I should say, my only experience with cattle ranches is like through watching Rawhide and things like that. Like, it's so distant from my life.
I don't know. It's just what we do. And it's something we know and mm-hmm. love and like. I mean, what do you like about radio? You know, it's just what you do.
What kind of relationship do you have with the cattle? I mean, it's probably really like with a horse. You can have a
Are
real
you talking
personal...
about Bossy or Flossy?
What
or
do
Daisy?
You mean?
We don't anthropomorphize our animals. We care very much about the horses and the cattle, but we don't treat them like children or people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. On your ranches, do you ever play the role of cowboy at all, or are you more like the manager who, you know, directs what's happening on the ranch, but you're not out there on the horse, you know, rounding up the cattle and all that?
You know, both. I own that country, and I own those cows and most of the horses, and we do it my way, and I don't ask anybody to do anything that I won't do myself. We all work together.
So you do some cowboy kind of work?
Yeah, I do some cowboy kind of work, yeah. That's, yes.
My guest is Tommy Lee Jones. He directed and stars in the new film, The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tommy Lee Jones. He directed and stars in the new film, The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada. In 1993, Jones won an Oscar for his supporting role in The Fugitive. Let's hear a scene in which Jones plays a U.S. Marshal who has just taken over the investigation at the scene of a crash between a train and a bus transporting prisoners. At least one prisoner, Richard Kimball, has escaped.
Listen up, ladies and gentlemen. Our fugitive has been on the run for 90 minutes. Average foot speed over uneven ground, barring injury, is 4 miles an hour. That gives us a radius of 6 miles. What I want out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area. Checkpoints go up in 15 miles. Your fugitive's name is Dr. Richard Kimball. Go get him.
Tommy Lee Jones in a scene from The Fugitive. Let's get back to our interview. When did you start thinking about acting?
I don't know. I think it was in the backyard when I was a little kid and we played war. You know, I used to really love getting shot or blown up by grenades or bombs. I'd roll across the yard and die a very dramatic death and then get up and do it again. I'd bushwhack people and then get ambushed. We were armed with sticks. I think that's really where it began. I was a rather histrionic kid. It probably had something to do with being an only child. By the time I got into high school, or prep school in my case, they had a rather serious theater department, and I took an interest there as well, and just kept it up through my undergraduate years. It was a very vital life of the theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts in the 60s. After graduation, I went to New York to see if I could compete with the professionals, and I got a job rather quickly, and I've been busy ever since.
Now, I read early in your career you worked with Zero Mostel. In what
I did.
In what context was that?
Well, we're doing a play on Broadway.
Which play was it?
It was called Ulysses in Nighttown, based on one of the chapters of James Joyce's book of Ulysses.
In some ways, he's such a different kind of actor than you are. I mean, he was very, very, very broad. Very big gestures.
He was also capable of doing small. Mm-hmm. He could do small, he could do big. He could do mm-hmm. whatever he wanted to do. He was a very bright man. He had his father was a rabbi, and he had somewhat of a rabbinical quality to him. If you were able to pay attention, he wouldn't slap you across the side of the head. He would... he was a good teacher and a great friend.
Did he give you any good advice about acting or life?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, we were good advice. We were, struggling with this script, and we were in the wings, you know, where all those ropes come down and they tie off on the little, you know, it's a standard backstage Broadway thing, and looking at this script and trying to find some passage from the book that would serve better than what we had in the script, trying to get this enormous whale of a book into a converted into a play, and we were working on it together, and I said, look, Z, we have to take this page out of the book and put it into the play and take this other stuff out. It's just not working, and I'm tired of fooling with it. And at that point, he did slap me across the side of the head, and he said, "Listen, Potts, don't put in too soon, don't take out too soon." Which is, you know, I thought it, you know, as I look back, is the soul of wisdom.
Now, the first feature film that you made was Love Story, and yeah. Which some people think is supposedly based in part on you and Al Gore from the period when you were roommates at Harvard.
Why do people think that?
I don't know, so I'll ask you. Why do people think that?
Because Eric Segal said it.
Oh, is that why people think it? Well, that sounds like it would be authoritative. He wrote and directed it, didn't he? Or wrote it anyway.
I think this guy's a classics scholar who writes cheap romance books for a hobby. He just happens to be lucky enough to have made a lot of money on it, and I'm very happy for him. I don't know why he would say such a thing except just for fun.
Okay. So what was it like the first time you saw yourself on screen in Love Story, you know, blown up real large, you know, on a big screen?
Yeah. My impression of the Love Story was that that was really my first professional acting role in the movie business. I thought it was kind of stiff and self-conscious. That's what I thought when I first saw it, and I still think that.
You spent, I think, 4 years working on One Life to Live, the soap opera. Did you learn about acting doing this? Was it useful for the craft?
Well, in a way, yeah. Because I remember the first day of working on that soap, asking the producer walked by, and I sort of got bold enough to ask a question, and I said, "Okay, I'm about to do this. How many people are going to be watching?" And this producer said, 13 million, and walked right on down the hall. And I was just horrified. It was a lot of pressure. So you become kind of, you know, immune to pressure after a while, after doing that job. You have to learn 5-6 pages of dialogue. Sometimes you have 24 hours to do it. So you, if you're going to keep the job, you can't really respond to pressure, and you have to be very quick and efficient. And you learn a lot about cameras and editing. It's usually a three camera two boom setup with four sets around the studio. I think after about 35, maybe 40 days, you'll learn everything there is to know about a three-camera, two-boom television show. And then after that, it's drudgery, but it pays the bills, so you can afford to do plays.
You stayed for 4 years. Did you want out after 4 years, or did they want to write out your character?
I quit, and they asked for 2 more weeks. And I said, okay. And in the second 2 weeks, I went from being an impossibly decent young doctor to a adulterer and a drug addict and a murderer and rapist.
Oh, and rapist too.
Oh, yeah. So that the audience wouldn't be sad to see me go.
How do they explain the sudden change?
And then I died.
And then I died.
I was murdered in a, well, not murdered, but justifiably killed in a parking lot.
How do they explain the sudden change in your personality? How do they explain on the air?
How do you explain anything in a soap opera? I mean, it just happens. You don't have to explain stuff.
Right.
It just has to be fun to watch.
My guest is Tommy Lee Jones. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. If you're just joining us, my guest is Tommy Lee Jones. He directed and stars in the new film, The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada, and he won Best Actor at Cannes Film Festival this year for the movie, and the screenplay won Best Screenplay. Now, I remember exactly when it was that I first, like, noticed you, and it's probably the first role I saw you in, which was The Eyes of Laura Mars. This is a film from, I think, 1978, and I don't know if you like the film. I happen to like it a lot. I saw it twice when it came out. And
you like those bell-bottom pants?
Oh, well.
Long hair and all that stuff. Well, there's a lot of pretty girls in that movie.
Well, it was a really good thriller. You know, Faye Dunaway plays a high-fashion photographer whose photographs are probably based on Helmut Newton, who did very dark fashion photography.
Yeah.
And suddenly everybody in the fashion world she works in is getting killed one by one, and she mm-hmm. and you are the police detective who is seems to be her protector until the very end, when we find out you're actually kind of a split personality and you're the killer.
Now, yeah.
What I'd like to do is
the bad guy.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is play this final scene, in
okay.
which you've smashed through the window of her home, and
yeah.
And. Slowly, she realizes you're the killer, too, that you have this kind of split personality. Here's the scene.
Oh, we're going to hear this. You know, I wrote this speech.
Oh, did you write this?
Yeah.
How come you ended up writing it?
We needed something, and Mr. Kirshner, the director, Irv Kirshner, whom we called Kirsch, beloved Kirsch, said, okay, you do it, kid.
So did you have, when you say you wrote the scene, obviously you wrote the words, but did you also come up with what was, like, the psychological premise behind what made him a split personality?
Yeah. I did.
How did you come up with that?
Well, I talked to, actually one of my classmates at from prep school had, by that point, had become a shrink, and I spent some time talking to him, a lot of time talking to him about multiple personalities, and he recommended about five or six books, and I read them, and this was the result.
That's a lot of work to do for a scene.
Well, you know, it's fun. I like my work.
Right, right. Well, let's hear the scene. This is Tommy Lee Jones and Faye Dunaway from The Eyes of Laura Mars.
I don't understand. No. Why would he kill all those people?
He hated you.
No.
No, he had the idea.
He didn't.
He had an idea that your work was glorifying violence. He had the idea that death shouldn't be used to sell things. Death is a sacred thing.
What are you talking about?
His mother.
No, I don't understand.
Tommy's mother. Hysterical woman. She was a hooker, you know. Leave him sitting 3-4 days at a time in a little one room. In the same pair of diapers. While she sold her ass up and down the streets of the nation's capital. You know, it wasn't very pretty.
No, that's not Tommy's story.
One day the father comes home. I think it was the father. Might have been a John, you know, a trick. It was a father. Outraged about the condition of the child, he slashes her pretty throat for her right there on the spot, you know. I sat there and watched the blood dry on her face until it was just about the color of your hair. You know?
Neville. Neville, you said hi.
Tommy Lee Jones and Faye Dunaway in a scene from The Eyes of Laura Mars. So you were just telling us you wrote that scene. Did Irvin Kirshner, the director, immediately say, that's great, let's shoot it, or did he want to change it at all?
No, it was okay with him. I mean, he saw it, you know, before we shot it. He thought it was... useful.
So what was the scene like before you wrote your part?
I don't think there was ever a good explanation in this. This screenplay was a mess.
Was it?
Yeah, when we first started to work. And we had to work on it all the time. And I don't remember what the original motivation for this character was, but it, everyone seemed to agree that it was inadequate.
So do you think I'm crazy for liking the movie? Do you still think of it as having been a mess, or do you think it was saved?
Oh, I don't know if it was saved or not, but it's, you know, Kurtz is very elegant with the camera. You know, he's a student of Ansel Adams. You know, there's no way the photography could have been bad. The story needed, and it got a lot of work, and I suppose it wound up, if you liked it, it worked.
There you go. Tommy Lee Jones, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.
Tommy Lee Jones directed and stars in the new film, The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
If he brings you happiness, then I wish you both the best. It's your happiness that matters most of all. But if he ever breaks your heart, if the teardrop ever starts, I'll be there before the next teardrop falls. Si te quieres de verdad.